Welcome to the One-Off Technology Podcast with opinions, news, and views. On this podcast, we talk about technology topics and how they affect you. I'm your host, Roy Richardson, and each week we will feature an entertaining guest to talk about different topics. Now let's begin the show.
All right, now I'm going to start recording so that I'll actually have something to edit later. Anyway, all right, so welcome to the One-Off Technology Podcast, and my guest today is Chuck Brink, and he's my devil's advocate to keep me straight on topics here when I go forward here, and also to just tell me the opposing viewpoint on anything I think, or just to be obtuse, right?
Yes, more probably that than anything else.
I'm or just, softly triangle. No, anyway. Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, today's topic and the name of this podcast is, Rosie, how do I stop this crazy thing? Robots and artificial intelligence. And, you know, the interesting thing I've noticed so much lately is that the rise of digital assistants, which, if people think about it, are a means of artificial intelligence. The definition of artificial intelligence, at least according to Google anyway, is the theory and development of computer systems able to perform tasks that normally require human intelligence, such as visual perception, speech recognition, decision-making, and translation between languages. That's a long definition.
It is, but I think that's a pretty solid definition. Gives you a good place to draw the line in the sand.
And most people probably don't think about it, but Siri and Google Now are both, and Cortana that comes built into Windows 10, are digital assistants. And by nature of the way they obtain their information, they are artificial intelligence.
Yep. And there's another one that you could maybe kind of sort of throw in that mix is a email-based digital assistant called Clara. I don't know if you've heard of that or not.
I have heard of that.
So I actually thought about signing up for Clara and getting my own digital personal assistant just to see how the whole thing worked. Until I read a little bit more about it, and I guess at this stage of the game, a lot of the magic that Clara does is still done by people. That there's a team of people watching everything that Clara does, sending the emails, writing the responses. So I don't really know how automated Clara is at this point, and how much privacy, so to speak, I would be giving up to people reading and watching everything that I'm doing. So yeah, maybe I'll give Clara a little bit yet.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, is Clara the one that does the like auto scheduling for you? So like, for example, rather than you having to coordinate with somebody and figure out whose schedule's open, Clara does that for you somehow. It does.
Yes.
A query, and then people do not schedule meetings with you. They actually schedule it with Clara. And Clara checks your calendar and finds a place for it. So you don't have to go through that, well, what's a good time for you? And, well, what's a good time for me type thing?
Yep, exactly. That's exactly what Clara does.
Okay, yep.
You give her access to your calendar, and she will then negotiate back and forth with others based upon what your calendar looks like to work out the most beneficial time. You give her some information about, you know, like my favorite restaurant is Olive Garden, and I like my meetings to preferably be dinner meetings and not lunch meetings and that sort of thing. So she knows generally when to schedule meetings with people or when to try and schedule them, where to schedule them, that sort of thing, so that, you know, she's not asking you for questions and doesn't really have to come back to you until the whole thing is final. So there's a little bit of setup and training that goes into it, but after that it's supposed to be pretty much automated.
And who doesn't love the OG?
I mean, I know.
The OG rocks.
Yes. So,
And, you know, the interesting thing is, speaking of digital assistants like Google Now, for example, because I'm an Android person, I've had a lot of experience with Google Now. Granted, because I live in the boonies, it's not all that useful here. But when I'm traveling and I'm in a big city, like for example, when I was in Seattle, it said, "Oh, well, hey, by the way, you know, traffic to get to your next location is going to take this long. You may want to leave an hour early. Your plane leaves at this time. If you need to be at the airport 1 hour before that, then you need to leave at this time. By the way, here are popular destinations near you. Here are restaurants near you." You know, because Google was able to search through my email, I gave it permission. It knew my flight itinerary, it knew about my hotel, and it was really awesome to be able to go on the Google Now and tap on things and say, "Hey, take me to my hotel." So, you know, every day I leave work and it take me straight to my hotel, and then I say, "Okay, let's go find some place to eat." And it's already got a list of places, and it was very helpful, very useful for that kind of thing. And then I use Google Now all the time to do searches for me, and they do silly things like tell me the weather or set a reminder for 7 p.m. tonight to record a podcast and all that kind of thing. And it does a good job, or save a note for me, and it will save a note in Keep, which is Google's little kind of poor man's Evernote, which I use a lot. I like it because it's just very simplistic. I don't have to do, it's not real complicated, and it backs up everything for me. And then Siri, you know, it's funny, the other day I was going to a meeting, a non-work related meeting, and I was taking my iPad in order to do some note taking. I just do that, it's convenient. And I use an app called Notability there. I could use Keep, but for some reason I like Notability on the iPad. And if it were available for Android, I'd use it. But anyway, so as I'm going out the door, I accidentally hit the button, and Siri comes up, and I said, "Oh, sorry, Siri, I didn't mean to do that." And Siri says, "No need to apologize." And I'm like, you know, tripping out, but and I know it's the programmers and developers behind Siri that you know think of these questions and think of funny or humorous responses to these questions. And when Siri doesn't have the answer, it goes out to either Wolfram Alpha or it goes out to Google and other sources to try to bring back useful information to certain questions. But then sometimes things that seem like the things that Siri should know, Siri just falls apart and is not very useful.
Yeah, as someone who is, I don't want to say diehard, you know, iPhone and Apple, but you know, all the phones I've had recently have been iPhones. The tablets we have in the household are iPads. The computers, save for my gaming PC, are all Macs now. Siri is horrible. She just, I even use like the Google apps on my iPhone and my iPad because she's not very good. She's not very bright. And, you know, I don't have, you know, any kind of strong offending accent from any region of the United States. I'm pretty mild in how I speak. I'm not really fast. And there's a lot of times Siri doesn't understand what I'm saying. I have to repeat myself a couple times. There are questions that I can ask that I would think Siri could be able to kind of single source the answer and just tell me, but I get the, "Oh, let me go to the web and search for that. And, you know, here's a list of 10 web pages you can go look at." I'm like, "No, I just want you to tell me the answer. I don't want you to go search the web." And if I go do that exact same thing in the Google app and do a search, Google Now will just give me the answer. It'll just read it off to me. You know, like the phone number for this car dealer is this, or the hours of this restaurant are this, whereas Siri's just going to give me the web page and say, "Here, go figure it out."
Yeah, and I love Google Now, and I do the same thing. I use the Google app on my iPad, and on an Android phone, I love the fact I say, you know, "Google, okay, Google, navigate me to blah blah blah," and it gives me directions. Did you know there's two blah blah blahs where you live?
I did not.
Oh, it's good to know. Yeah, within 5 minutes driving for one, and I think it's about 15 for the other. But you know. But, you know, to get that information, and the way I always look at it is Google now is kind of just the facts. Just the facts. And Siri is an attempt to give you information with a little personality and a little bit of usefulness. Sometimes Siri can be very useful in the things that it's really good at. And the point I'm mentioning about all these digital assistants is that they are artificial intelligence. And when you think about all the data mining that is happening in the background, all these thousands of computers that are taking chunks of your voice search to try to find what you are actually searching for at that moment, that information is slowly kind of building a character about you and determining what your preferences are. It's like, oh, well, Roy doesn't like Baskin-Robbins ice cream for some reason. He's more of a frozen yogurt fan. And so I'm going to make sure I route him to frozen yogurt places instead. And,
yep.
You know, with the advent of all of this, these digital assistants and artificial intelligence reaching new realms, you know, the robots are coming to take us away. We're going to be taken over by machines, because if you think about this, if the digital assistants are able to help us in a lot of new ways, if we can eventually take the robots and the robots can do the manual labor, and you tie the artificial intelligence with the robots, there will come a day when the robots can do most of our jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's always the concern, you know, especially of, you know, the more blue-collar worker is, you know, oh, God, in, you know, 15, 20 years, I'm not going to have a job because there's going to be robots doing everything. And, you know, I think that doesn't really bear out, or at least I don't think so. I mean, if you look over the history of things over the last, say, 100 years, where the Industrial Revolution has really kicked off and a lot of manufacturing used to be done by hand, manually assembling parts and all those sorts of things, like how a car is manufactured. You know, there's a lot of robotics and things involved with how they get assembled, how they get painted and whatnot, but there's still people involved. We have never been able to remove the human element from the whole equation. There still has to be people to build the robots, set up the robots, configure them, you know, repair them if they break, or you know, change out parts, that sort of thing. So the work may shift from the manual part of it to, you know, more, I guess, elevated skills, where we're no longer the ones turning the wrenches and tightening the bolts on the product. We're now the ones turning the bolts and tightening the wrenches on the robot that's turning the wrenches and tightening the bolts on the product. So I think the work just shifts from one end to another. But, you know, it's not like, because so many places are now automated with their manufacturing, that, you know, 3/4 of the country is out of work because robots. I just don't see that happening.
Well, okay. So, like, for example, a book by Martin Ford called Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. Ford points out that we've kind of gone through this previously, where our economy has adapted because technology took over. In the 1800s, 80% of the jobs were farming jobs, and, you know, and nowadays technology has shifted such that only 2% of all the jobs in America are farming jobs. And so the world, the Industrial Revolution took place, and the world changed, and farmers became factory workers. And so his theory is that the world will adapt. Now, granted, his theory kind of gets kind of utopian, in that he kind of sees a world where we all kind of become entrepreneurs, and somehow or another, we get to the point where robots do so much of the work that we just get a salary, and robots do all the work, and we don't have to do all that much labor. But, and I don't see that happening, but that's the premise of his ideas. But I very much see how, like, for example, Google and Ford and so many companies, even supposedly Apple, are working on driverless cars. Now, so I can see a world where, well, Uber doesn't have to exist anymore because now, you know, or maybe Uber exists, but all its cars are driverless because, you know, there's no need for a driver anymore. If the car can just take you where you need to be, then why have a driver?
If we could get to a world where there's no taxi drivers that are trying to take me for a ride and run up my fare or be obnoxious and try to kill me on the way to the airport, I would be definitely in favor of this.
Well, the robots may still try to kill you, but, you know, I mean, the fear I have with the, well, I actually love the idea of a driverless car, but two things that concern me one off the bat is, one, not everybody's going to go for a driverless car. You're going to have people that insist on continuing to drive, and humans make mistakes. And two, if it's digital, if it has a computer, it can probably be hacked. Sure. I mean, I think of horrendous pileups on the interstate with all these driverless cars because somebody hacked everything up, or if the cars are talking to each other either through Bluetooth or 6G or 5G, whatever the technology is by the time this world happens, then they do radio interference, and suddenly now the cars have a clue where the traffic is, or the satellites are not able to talk to because of this. Suddenly there's a huge pileup and people are killed. Now, granted, you know, if we get to a world where cars are electric, then potentially they could put even more safeguards into vehicles, you know, because they'll eliminate the engine and need for a lot of things that take up too much space, and can make the cars a lot safer. You know, maybe it's nothing but one big marshmallow with wheels. But, you know, that day may come, but, you know, those are things I worry about and think about because I'm trying to think of what the future is going to look like for me, what the future is going to look like for my kids, and to set out, what direction do I go in next if I want to make sure I'm in the future?
I don't know. You lost me at marshmallow on wheels because now I was starting to think about like ice cream and chocolate sauce, and there would be nothing left of that vehicle when I got to wherever I was going. So,
yeah, I can see that. You know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it gets into, you know, what kind of safeguards you can build into cars like that. That, you know, I'm sure it's, you know, you could do it where if I lose my connection to the mothership, basically the satellite or whatever, I just stop moving, you know, so, or I, you know, slow down, pull off to the side of the road, or, you know, if a sensor becomes disabled, I slow down, pull off to the side of the road, you know, I'm sure there's tons of things that they can do to build in redundancy and safeguards and whatnot to try and, keep from injuring anyone in the process. If, you know, something does get hacked, or, you know, sunspots take out satellites and that sort of thing, or solar flares, not sunspots.
It could be sunspots too. I can't see because of the sunspots.
Exactly. But I think it's got to be safer than people driving the cars for the most part. Where I've seen a lot of controversy of it is what happens when the computer is presented with that impossible situation. Do, you know, I crash the car to save the pedestrian that walked out in front of me and potentially injure my passenger, or do I hit the pedestrian and injure them but save the passenger and prevent them from being injured? You know, how would you feel if you landed in the hospital because your driverless car decided, oh, somebody walked out in front of me, you know, and I need to preserve their life, but in so doing, I ran you into a brick wall, and now I'm in the hospital. Shouldn't my car be watching out for me and screw the pedestrian that decided to walk out in front of me? That's where I see a lot of the controversy, you know, coming up on the internet.
Well, and I can see it. So, you know, we were talking about jobs that are going to disappear, and recently there was an article in, it was actually the BBC, BBC.com had an article back in September of last year, September 14th, 2015, if anybody's wanting to Google that. And it talked about jobs that specifically would probably be taken over by robots first, and taxi driver was one of the first jobs. And then factory workers, which that kind of happens a lot now. You go into any car manufacturer facility, there are lots of robots. They're doing lots of the jobs there. Journalists, believe it or not, if you read financial reports, earning reports in Forbes, or you read sports stories with Associated Press, a lot of them now are written not by a robot, but written by software, where it takes amalgamations of all these different stories and creates charts and graphs and creates a story, and so eliminates the need. So machines are writing 90% of the news that are written on, in some sources of news these days. So it's just a crazy thing. It's going to happen more and more. Then doctors, for example, now I'm kind of in favor of the idea of a robot doctor in some ways, because, well, I can go ahead and say his bedside manner is not going to be the best I've ever seen. So he had lousy bedside manner, but he took my appendix out and I didn't even feel it. So it was awesome.
There you go.
And I think the precision of a robot, while they're not completely foolproof, there's a lot of surgeries that have laser surgeries and that type of thing that have a lot of robotics involved. And I see that becoming more and more. And then you have kind of like the telepresence type robots. So the robot is at a location, the doctor is able to use the robot in order to talk to the patient. I see those days happening more and more. You've seen stories in the past, I'm sure, about students that had some medical condition, but for some reason they weren't able to work it out where they could attend classes remotely. So they had a robot go to each one of the students' classes, and the student actively participates in the class through the robot. The kid's face is on the screen, and it has a camera, and it's able to see the teacher, and it actually walks down the hall and changes classes. It seems like a lot of overhead, but I guess for some reason or other they decided this was the best approach, or people wanting to try things out, and so I don't know. But then bartenders will probably be replaced by robots. You can automate that whole process of dispensing drinks. I mean, that whole thing's basically like a soda fountain. Here you go, this is what you want, all the stuff that goes in your drink.
They're actually starting to do that with chefs. Have you seen some of the articles floating around now about those, I think it's like a pair of robots that they started employing in, I think, Japan to cook noodles and a few other dishes. So it's already starting to happen. Anything that is very procedural, where I take a specific set of ingredients, I do a specific set of things to it, and then a product is created. That's perfect work for a robot, because it's going to take the exact amount of ingredient, do the exact same thing to it every time to produce an exact result every single time. And yes, that's what we want in our food. How many times you go to a restaurant or a bar and you get pissed off that, oh, this, drink is too watery. They didn't put enough, liquor in it, or they put too much mixer, or my steak is undercooked, or, the potato is overcooked. A robot would take out a lot of that variation. It's going to follow that recipe precisely every single time. So every time you get that drink, it's going to be the same. There's no, I need to go to the Chili's bar on Friday nights at 9 because I know the same bartender works there and she's the only one that can make a drink worth a damn. If I go any other night, it's going to be somebody else, and they make them too weak or too strong or whatever. So with the robots, you would have a much more consistent output. Even if you wanted to tell them, make mine stronger, they would probably increase it in a specific increment every time, so you could get that same output every single time.
I guess the downside, you can't tip the bartender to get more liquor in your drinks.
There is that, though.
There is that downside, yeah. But, and it was funny because I was like thinking about, I've often joked, if the robots take over the jobs, then we need to figure out how to fix robots, and that can be your job in the future. And I was thinking about, I don't know why, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory popped into my head, how Charlie's dad makes toothbrushes, and then at the end of the movie, and the book, but at the end of the movie, he fixes the robots that has replaced all the workers that makes the toothbrushes,
Right.
So, and that's just how I think about it. the job that you want to have after the robots take over is the job where you fix the robots or where you program the robots. You know, I think about the three laws of robotics that Isaac Asimov, you know, did in his science fiction series, like iRobot, for example. And the three laws were being, you know, one, a robot may not injure a human being, or through action allow a human being to come to harm. So this kind of matches up. You can think of those driverless cars as robots, and the car has to make a decision between protecting the passenger in the car and the pedestrian. And then the second law, a robot must obey the orders given by human beings, except where such order would cause conflict with the first law. And then the third law, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws. You know, so I'm thinking, you know, I didn't even think about a pedestrian, but when I was thinking about the scenarios about, you know, driverless cars, I'm thinking about the dog runs out in front of the driverless car, the deer runs out in front of the driverless car. What is the ethics of that? You know, if it's, you know, protect the human, run over the dog. So poor Fido, but the human's fine, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I think that there needs to be laws, much like these three laws of robotics, that need to exist as we go forward into this brave new world where robots, you know, take over the world, so to speak, and take over more and more jobs. And there's even scenarios where, you know, as you mentioned a chef, a robot could be a lawyer, you know, if you think about it. I mean, to be able to so quickly regurgitate, I mean, imagine IBM's Watson. Everybody's probably familiar with Watson computer. You know, had played on Jeopardy and beat the champion on Jeopardy. Of course, I thought it was kind of rigged, but, you know, that's fine. You know, they had to fashion the show to match up with how the robot, you know, not robot, but how the computer could take the questions. And so, but I you know, just imagine Watson in that scenario, that, you know, he would be capable of doing those things, be able to be a lawyer. He can literally search all case law that has ever happened in the United States, even world courts or courts around the world, and quickly regurgitate those facts to a judge to say, well, in this case, you know, so-and-so versus so-and-so, there was legal precedence, this is what was set, and Your Honor, this is why you should find in my favor.
Right.
You know, so it's just a matter of time. And I can actually see robots as being much better bosses. I can.
I know
I can, because you think about it, they are, if they are programmed correctly, they will be consistent with everyone who reports to them. Assuming you put in the logic of true project management, but they're able to handle also risk analysis and financials, and they have all that information. Artificial intelligence would have to be involved here, where you can take, hey, these are things that need to be accomplished in the project. These are the number of hours that would take for each task based on averages. This is what it's going to cost for each task to take place based on my resources. And, you know, to have to make a call, well, now we have the following issue. This issue monetarily will cost the company this much money if we don't resolve it. So we need to perhaps pause this step in the project in order to make this step happen. You know, just, you know, I see a day and time where when robots and artificial intelligence working together can indeed, you know, take over all these things.
Maybe. I don't know if I completely agree with that. I think there's probably only going to be so much that it can handle processing, so much data that it has stored, so much that it has access to, and it would lose the human element and understanding that, you know, some people are going to be better at this than others, that, you know, people have, you know, things going on in their lives that are causing them to work, you know, less quickly. And it may not understand that, you know, oh, Bob's got, you know, a family member that's going through something difficult at the moment, so they're a little distracted, so I need to give him, you know, 15% more time to complete whatever tasks, where a human understands that, you know, we're not always operating at peak efficiency. So I don't know. I think that'd be hard for any kind of artificial intelligence to be able to take on the management of people.
Well, see, the question is will robots ever reach the point where they have maybe not emotions, but an awareness of emotion enough to have empathy? But I mean, you got to think about it. Humans have kind of even lost empathy. It's gotten to a point where people are so stiff and cold, and they don't seem to care so much about other people's feelings. It seems like a very selfish world at times. And maybe a robot that makes very precise decisions would be easier for people to accept because it's just a robot. I can't expect this robot in any way, shape, or form to have any compassion or understanding of how things are in my life and make decisions based on that. They're going to make cold and calculated decisions. Now, granted, when the robots start firing people, then, well, everybody's going to hate that. But, in some ways, at least the robot could be consistent in all decisions as opposed to a manager, which you catch him on a bad day, he makes a bad decision. You catch him on a good day, he makes a good decision. People are affected. This morning I took cold medicine. Now I can't see straight. I'm going to fly an airplane.
Right.
I even, robots flying the airplanes. I mean, with satellites and, responders and everything, all the airplanes being able to manage themselves and fly us and land us safely every time, to be able to make calculations and stuff. I think the day is going to come. The day is going to come. Have you seen the movie Ex Machina?
Yes, I have.
That is an awesome movie. I really liked it. Kind of starts off a little cold, but I like the movie, and of course I was surprised by the ending of it, but that's the nature of the movie.
I think that movie shows where AI can go wrong. If you give it any kind of emotional awareness, I think that's a dark road. That I think we can either have artificial intelligence that is more of that cold, stark, calculating, I'm purely looking at, just the facts, ma'am, type situation. That is probably okay. When you start getting into, what you're talking about, where the AI understands and can respond to emotions and that sort of thing, I think that's a very dark road, because I think that's when, like, the three laws or whatever start to get a little muddy, because then it's trying to make interpretations of how and what those laws might mean and what people mean and what their existence means. They start to wonder a little too much. I think as long as you keep the intelligence in a box, I think it's a little safer. So I've watched a lot of what Neil deGrasse Tyson has said about AI, and it doesn't concern him at all, because oh, if I have made the thing, I can break the thing, and Skynet will never happen, and the Terminators will never be a thing, because we could always just shut them off or turn them off. And I don't know that it's that easy, because if a technology starts out benign enough that it gets integrated enough, and then suddenly it becomes aware that, oh, maybe I have this better idea. I have a way, I see a way I can serve humanity better if I do this thing, and it flips a switch and becomes, a homicidal maniac. I can save humanity by killing humanity, save it from itself, and that's how I am preventing harm to people, is by getting rid of the people. Then, it's a very dark. It's a very dark path, I think, when you start going down that way.
Well, and then the other side of that is we reach that point where we suddenly decide that machines make so much better decisions than humans, therefore we're going to fully trust the machine, and then you have like HAL in 2001 Space Odyssey.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of like when we were talking about Google Now and Siri. Google Now, to me, is more of the AI that I would want to have working for me, with me, whatever, because it's more of a just the facts. I'm doing exactly what you asked me to do. I'm not socializing my responses at all. Siri, on the other hand, is giving you a more socialized response. You know, it's asking, hey, how can I help you? How are you today? You know, it's saying please and thank you, and it's employing those social niceties that make it feel more human. And I think that's the wrong way to go. It allows it to, I don't know, I guess ingrain itself in us more easily. And sure, we might trust it a little more, but I think that's where it starts to go wrong. We start to look at it more as our friend instead of a piece of technology that should be kept an eye on.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you think about like Star Wars, for example, you've got C-3PO and R2-D2, and those are both, and it's a world, and let's, well, I hate to say Star Wars A New Hope. The first Star Wars in my mind, but anyway. But okay, Star Wars A New Hope, movie 4. So, you know, in that, here it is, robots are very much part of the farm. You know, they're very much helper machines, like a combine or a hay baler. You know, so they're literally, you know, just machines. But, of course, the other part of that is that the world's gotten so complex that you have to have a robot to be able to translate the language that the machines are speaking that are doing the work. So, right. I mean, it's just a crazy world when you think about that. You know, I like it in that case where the robots are helpers. Of course, we could argue, okay, so if Anakin built C-3PO, and then later on, C-3PO has continued to live through all these movies. Where the heck did he come from? But, you know... And, wait. So, I guess the world changes at some point, because now we live in a world where every year there's a new device that has upgraded dramatically and now is so much better than the previous devices. We will eventually get the world where robots are just so out, you know, have everybody has so many robots that we don't keep upgrading anymore. Oh, you know, C-3PO has been great. I'll keep him around for 50 years. And then you got an old man, you know, out that doesn't remember he ever owned a robot. Ben Kenobi, do you not remember that this robot used to belong to you? Well, no, he didn't, because he was built by Anakin, who turned out to be Darth Vader, and you blocked this all out of your mind. I could totally understand that. It's probably some post-traumatic stress syndrome. It's got to be why he forgot that he once had a robot, R2-D2, even though he didn't really. So anyway,
yeah, don't ask too many questions.
Yeah, it's just too complicated there. You know, there's some holes. Okay. Now, have you seen the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix?
No, I have. I haven't. Man. I want to, though.
Okay. You just go ahead, and we're going to stop now, and you go watch it, and then we'll start back the podcast, okay?
All right, okay. Sure.
But, I mean, so the flip side is that we get to a world where artificial intelligence has gotten so good that it's able to play our emotions, and the things in our mind that we think are love, we fall in love with this artificial intelligence. So in the case of Her, hopefully I'm not spoiling the plot there, Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with an operating system.
Right.
You know, there's no physical being. He's just falling in love with an operating system because this operating system can relate to him. And he's very much an introvert. So, you know, it's a really good movie. And it just kind of, that's another area that the world is going to explore. You know they will. Whether they should or not, they will. But, you know, the world's going to go in some strange patterns. It always does. I think pretty much the world is chaos and settled all at the same time. And it's kind of some kind of strange karma where opposing forces are always fighting. And it's always extremism. You always have the extremes to the far left and the far right for everything. You know, what is the farthest possible way we can take this? And it's the pendulum swing. We've taken it too far. and then it comes back, and then the pendulum swings the other direction, and we've taken it too far, and it swings back. So, you know, I see very much a day. I don't know if you've ever read a book called, have you ever read the book Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card?
No, but I saw the movie.
The movie didn't do it justice. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It was sad because I would have loved to have seen the sequel, which is called Speaker of the Dead. And in Speaker of the Dead, you have Jane, who is an Ansible computer that's on a chip that's in Ender Wiggins' ear. And she's basically exists all over the universe because communication has basically reached the speed of light, or actually faster than the speed of light. Now things can instantaneously communicate. And, you know, I see a world where we have that in-ear assistant that's with us at all times. And we'll say, you know, Jane, you know, what do you think about this situation? Or, Jane, what's the temperature going to be today? And what's the weather? And how should I dress today? And all of our most simple life decisions can be made by an artificial intelligence. And then we're left to just think about the more complicated things. And I kind of like that. I like that we could get to a world where the simple things get taken care of and we don't have to worry about that anymore. And we can be more cerebral as human beings. And will we get smarter? Will we have giant brains to match up with that world? I don't know. But that I hope for a world like that. And I hope for a world where robots are helpers and not hinderers. And we don't have to send the police out to go capture a robot that just killed a human. And we don't have robot armies, but I know that day will come as well because, again, any idea that comes up, we always take it to the extreme. And there'll come a day where, well, yeah, we didn't have to send any troops out, but we already have this almost. We have drones that are going out and do drone strikes. I see a world where drone armies go fighting against each other. It's kind of like the clone armies in Star Wars. So, you know, that world may come.
And that's where I think it gets dangerous when we start letting, you know, AI get involved with robots and that sort of thing. Because, you know, you talk about, oh, well, we'd have these three laws to protect us. But you know that the military is going to create robots that don't have the three laws. Because, well, we want these robots to go out and, you know, do our fighting for us, do our killing for us, therefore they can't have those three laws because they wouldn't be very effective killers if they couldn't harm other humans. So
if unless those we just robots, do tasers.
Well,
they all go out and do tasers, right? That can cause heart attacks.
Yeah, the military isn't going to go for that. They seem to like their killing. So
they do like killing things.
They're probably going to build these robots without the three laws that are going to be capable of killing and destroying. So if those robots ever became sentient in whatever capacity, that's a very scary future. I think that's where the, you know, Skynet type future comes in, is that we've now got these robots out there that are war machines that aren't sworn to protect us. And you know, it goes real bad real quick.
Well, and like the Matrix, we all turn, you know, all the humans become batteries for the machines.
Mm-hmm.
After we black out the sky.
Yep. That, you know, I think it becomes some kind of a, it would end up becoming a war against us and them. You know, I think that's why we have to kind of keep the AI in the box, if you will. Keep it contained, only let it evolve to a certain point and for certain functions, because otherwise it will go too far, too many places, and you know, computers can think and most likely evolve a lot quicker than what people can, and whatever safeguards we put in place to just shut it down, turn it off, destroy it, it will probably figure those out and disable them, and then, you know, we'll have no recourse.
Yeah. So where do we end up from here?
I don't know. I think, you know, it will continue to be the case of what history has always been, where we build it without really knowing or asking the question, should we? You know, we do a lot of things because we can, and then after something horrible has happened, we ask the question, ooh, should we have done that? And I think a lot of times the answer is no, probably not, like the nuclear bombs. or atomic weapons. You know, we created them because we could, and then immediately after we used them, we said, oh my God, this is horrible and horrendous. We can never, ever use these things again. And we've spent the rest of our lives since that point trying to disarm the world and keep them from being ever used again, because we know how much harm and damage they cause.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the great strides of artificial intelligence are going to continue. Recently, Google researchers actually kind of beat the game that no one ever thought computers would beat. Go, which is it's 2,500 plus 1,000 years old. Game is just so much more complex than chess. It's a very popular game in China. That was kind of the, you know, originally computers beating championship chess players was thought as the first kind of obstacle to proof of artificial intelligence. And now you've got, they've beaten the game of Go, which is way more complex than chess. And so humans have finally been beaten in a game of Go. And so this was like the hurdle they thought would take forever to accomplish, and it's finally been accomplished. Funny enough, even weeks before it got announced, I had heard, read a scientific paper that was talking about how the game of Go was going to be the thing that had kind of proved out, the artificial intelligence would eventually become what it needed to be. And so that's just amazing to me. And so, I think it's just a matter of time before, and then you get calls now from AIs, robot voices that are, have the prompts and everything, and then they start talking to you, and then they have canned responses based on what you say. And sometimes you can tell these things are robot voices, and sometimes it's a challenge. But, it used to be the old game, the AI game of, how does that make you feel? You ever played one of those AIs that would, ask you all these questions like that?
Yeah, and I hate all of those. I would much rather. I mean, I'm one of those people that every time I call any kind of customer service number, and there's any kind of prompting system to say, at any time you can say, representative, or you can, tell me what you'd like to do, and I'll get you to the right person. I'm the one that's either pressing zero over and over and over, trying to just get that computer to go away. So just get me to a person that has some semblance of a brain, because I don't want to talk to a robot. Or I'm just saying representative, representative, representative over and over again to try and get out of whatever these stupid prompts are, because it seems like no matter what I say, it can't get me to where I'm going. Again, it's kind of like the Siri thing all over again. It's not understanding. I'm speaking before it's ready to start listening, or I'm cutting it off, and then that throws it off, and then it says, oh, I didn't quite get that, and then it starts from the beginning, and I'm like, oh my God, just shut up and let me get to a person.
Yeah, I always say human, and sometimes it works.
Well, I'll have to try that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking we need to start asking, should we, before we start creating all of these AIs and turning them loose. I'm okay with the very self-contained products like the Google Now and the driverless cars and those sorts of things. But before we start creating automatons and that sort of thing that have AI in them, I think we need to ask a lot of questions first.
All right, well, I think that kind of concludes our topic for today. If anybody wants to send us questions, feel free to contact me on Twitter at @AroyRichardson. I'm out there. Feel free. Chuck is anti-Twitter. So contact me, and I'll ask Chuck. So
There you go.
All right. I thank Chuck. I appreciate you as always helping out with this endeavor here, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it. And hopefully they're thinking just a little bit more about artificial intelligence and robots as they go through their day and day and talk to Siri and tell her their deepest, darkest secrets and wonder what Siri's doing with them.
That's right. And don't ask her what she's wearing.
Don't ask. It does make her grumpy. Oh, ask her to tell you a bedtime story.
Yes, that is hilarious.
It is hilarious. I do like that, yeah. So, all right. Yes.
All right.
Yes, don't ask her what she's wearing.
Thank you, Roy.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the One-Off Technology Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Look for other episodes of our podcast coming to a podcast universe near you.